gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Popcorn Optional, your favorite weekly movie podcast where we do normally a movie review, but tonight we're going to do something different. I think me and Trevor were a little bit too scared to see Mother this week, and so we're going to switch things up a little bit. But my name is Cameron Selene, and tonight I'm joined by Trevor Allison.
Hello.
Jake Brown couldn't be with us tonight. He's too busy off doing actual important things, like, you know, making actual movies and short films. As compared to, you know, us just talking about them and critiquing things. But since last time, and it seems like this has been known for a while, but we haven't talked about it yet. We're a movie podcast, and I want to talk about it. So since last time, the news came out that J.J. Abrams will be directing Episode 9 of Star Wars, and that the movie is being pushed from May 24th, 2019, to December 20th, 2019. So, Trevor, exciting news, boring news, you saw this coming news. What was your thought when you heard J.J. Abrams was doing Episode 9?
I mean, yeah, I think this news came out like the day after, or right after we recorded our last podcast, where we kind of all mentioned J.J. Abrams is definitely a speculative option. I think that, and I'm not really surprised the release date was moved back. I think that might have happened anyway, because they've been doing really well with these December releases on these films. I mean, not like it even really matters when Star Wars is released at all, actually.
Right.
You could release it like on a Tuesday in February and people would go it just as much. It doesn't matter.
It may do better on a Tuesday in February.
Actually, that may be true. You're right. But as I think Jake said last time, he said that J.J. Abrams is the safe pick. And I completely agree. I think you go with, I mean, Star Wars doesn't need to be necessarily original. It is what it is. It works because it's the foundation is so great that when you stay true to the characters, true to the series, it works. And J.J. Abrams has already shown that he can do that. And I think that he's going to have a little bit more, I think it's going to be a little bit more creative maybe than what we saw in 7, with 7 being so similar to 4, which I go on record as not having any problems with that. I know some people do, but I think Abrams is the safe pick. I think, it's not necessarily terribly exciting, but I have no issues with it whatsoever. And he's going to give us a worthy conclusion to this new trilogy.
Yeah, I think that he's a good choice. He's a safe choice. He's that choice that, like, when you hear J.J. Abrams is directing Episode 9, you're kind of like, yeah, I can see that. It's not like, when Rian Johnson was announced, you're like, oh my goodness, that's perfect. Like, I couldn't have thought of a better fit for that. The release date being pushed back is interesting. It gives Lucasfilm 18 months to turn around that film from the start of production to the end. Just as comparison, Episode 7 started filming in February of 2016 and was put out in December of 2017, which is a 22-month schedule. So 4-month difference, really not that big of a deal. But my hope is that Rian Johnson does something so different, unique, and out there that JJ doesn't even have the option to replicate Return of the Jedi. And right. Really just kind of has to do his own thing.
But, right. I agree. I think that Johnson's going to take it in a different direction. That's what we've seen, or all of the indicators so far, that it's going to be something a little bit different. Which I'm excited about. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's J.J. Abrams. He doesn't make bad things, as we talked about last week.
But he does make a lot of meh things.
That's true. But also, you know, like, well, first of all, he definitely has read the script for 8, 100%. So he knows what's going on in 8. He's probably already seen it, actually. And if it's finished, maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
It's,
who knows?
Supposedly it is finished, wrapped, like there is no more editing to be done. It's done.
And it's on a server that's definitely not connected to the internet.
It's on like a server that if North Korea bombs us, it can quickly be uploaded to Vimeo so that we can watch it in whatever time we have left.
Right, exactly. So,
which,
I mean, Abrams... And
the
you
director
know Abrams,
joked about, but I'm somewhat, like, curious, like, okay, if they shoot an ICBM, like, what's the reality of that? Is he just start tweeting out spoilers? Like, what are we... what happens?
I mean, yeah, we need to know. If nothing, we have to know.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know that Abrams is the kind of guy, he definitely had some kind of vision for how he would do this. I don't think he's starting from scratch or from zero here with what they want to do. And I'm sure that Kathleen Kennedy has some kind of vision for this as well. So I am not worried about this. I do think that he may have been chosen as some sort of a reaction to the Lord and Miller disaster, that they kind of wanted to make sure they got this one right and played it safe.
Yeah, because I think my understanding is that episode 9 is the last of the Skywalker saga, and then they're going to take some time off from the Skywalker saga and maybe come back to that in like 10 or 12 years.
Yeah.
Which would be the same time difference. 12 years is what the time difference was between episode 3 and episode 7. Keep releasing one-off films, and that's where like a trilogy of Obi-Wan films would come out, and hopefully like Old Republic films, but I think that's their plan, and I would love for them to get to that and just kind of take a step away from Skywalker saga and explore more of the universe, because this universe is just so rich with stories that, I mean, you have enough to keep you busy for like 20 gosh, more than 20 years if you release a movie a year.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
That's all we have for news this week, but there's two trailers that I want to talk about that came out this past week that I think are remarkable because of the fact that I'm going to guess these two films will play heavily come Oscar season. And those two films are the new trailer for the movie Downsizing, which is the next film from Alexander Payne, who did Sideways, The Descendants and Nebraska, and The Disaster Artist, which is the new film directed by James Franco, which tells the story of Tommy Wiseau, however you say his last name, legendarily bad movie The Room, starring James Franco, and it's amazing. But let's talk about Downsizing first. So the basic premise of Downsizing is that you have the option to, you as a person in the future, have the option to be shrunk down to a, like, 6-inch tall person, and your money's converted. So, like in the trailer, they say, like, you guys have $52,000 right now. In the smaller area, or smaller, whatever the town is called, you have the equivalent of $12 million because of the resources and everything that are needed to, for you to live. And it stars Matt Damon, Christoph Waltz, Kristen Wiig, and a series of other people, but it looks fantastic. I mean, this is such a unique premise that it's kind of one of those things where you're like, maybe Alexander Payne is the only person that can pull this kind of weird, like, I think Wes Anderson could probably pull off this quirky thing, but not with the same sincerity and probably, I guess, dramatic moments that I'm going to guess are going to come with this film. Trevor, what do you think of the Downsizing trailer?
Yeah, it's interesting. It kind of seems like it's going to be in that Eternal Sunshine category of sci-fi that pretends like it isn't sci-fi, which is always kind of a fun genre and a fun way to approach these kind of things. It's a really interesting premise. It's one that could go really well. I think that it's in good hands with Payne, and I saw that he wrote the script too, so it seems like it's at least somewhat of an original idea to him. He does a great job of making you feel emotions without exploiting your emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the Descendants is just a magnificent portrayal of his ability as a director. We know that Matt Damon is great. I would be kind of hesitant about Kristen Wiig and Jason Sudeikis being in this kind of movie were it not for Payne, because I think he can get what he needs to out of them. But it also doesn't look like it's going to be quite as funny as the normal Kristen Wiig kind of shtick that we see. So that's kind of an intriguing idea. And I think, it's very interesting. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing this.
Yeah, I think, Trevor, you hit on a good point. It's that, you know, mediocre actors, not to say that like Sudeikis is a mediocre actor, but this definitely isn't his wheelhouse, at least. But when you think like Matthew Lillard was in The Descendants and he was great in that movie, that gives me confidence that it's like, okay, Alexander Payne is the type of director that could handle, you know, a movie thematically and emotionally, tone-wise, that this movie needs to be. Because I have a feeling that there's going to be some very... The trailer plays it up as a very, like, fun look at life, but I have a feeling there's going to be some very dramatic moments that come with
movie. I think it's the film is going to ask some pretty big questions.
Yes. As most Payne films do that make us contemplate life and love and what those things mean to each person individually. So
I mean, he got a dynamite performance out of Shailene Woodley, who is not great in other things.
I think she's a lot better than people give her credit for. I think she's gotten... I think she's had some bad roles. Let me say that.
I've not seen Big Little Lies, though.
I haven't seen that either, but that's supposedly she's amazing in that.
Right, yeah.
We should also say that the Emmys happened this week, but I don't watch nearly enough TV to keep up with what happened at the Emmys. Like, half the things that won, I realized I hadn't seen. I'm happy Atlanta won, because that show's amazing. And Donald Glover gets... or should get all the respect and love that he can because he's super talented. But half the shows that won, I was like, I haven't seen that. I'm way behind on TV. That's
I've mostly defaulted to basically only watching things that have completed their run.
Yes.
Which is just kind of how TV works with my life. Because I don't want to be waiting for the next season of like 14 different shows at a time.
Yeah.
So, I basically just, you know, I like look 5 years later. Oh yeah, that definitely should have won this Emmy, or no, that shouldn't have, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you. It's hard to get invested in a show and then keep up with it week after week. I think Netflix has definitely, spoiled us in the fact that, you know, there are so many shows that we can binge watch nowadays, yep. Which is how,
also,
I mean, go ahead.
If Steve Carell did not win an Emmy for playing Michael Gary Scott, what are we even doing? Oh,
exactly. Michael Gary Scott, I don't know. I mean, especially seasons like 3, 4, he's two he's great in, but I think 3 and 4 are peak Michael Scott seasons.
Yeah.
The next trailer we want to talk about is The Disaster Artist. Trevor, what was your reaction to this trailer?
All right, so I saw that, I saw the, was it like just a clip that they released a few months ago? Mm-hmm. And I
the infamous
I had,
"Oh hi, Mark" scene.
Yes. So I had no, I'd kind of vaguely heard about this film, The Room. So I kind of looked into it. It's apparently like a thing. People have these screenings and they go to it and they like recite the entire movie. It's like the ultimate example of people loving bad things because they're bad. It's one of those things where I know we've talked about this concept before on the podcast. I'm not sure if, I mean, I think the movie is going to be funny. I'm not sure that it's going to be more interesting than like a documentary about the actual people making this movie. But that clip they had of Franco doing that, it was hilarious. And
yeah,
the line in the trailer by Seth Rogen about like, the set looks just like an alley, why don't we shoot in the alley, and he's like, it's a real Hollywood movie.
It's really like, Hollywood movie.
And so like, it's very bizarre. I mean, Franco looks like he's gonna be hilarious in it. Seth Rogen looks like he's playing himself, maybe. Which is fine, I guess.
Does Seth Rogen ever not play himself?
I guess that's true. I don't know what this movie is going to be, but I'm intrigued by it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm super intrigued by it. I've never seen The Room.
I feel like we have to watch The Room before we watch The Disaster Artist.
I feel like we need to do a double feature and watch review The Room and The Disaster Artist, because I don't feel like you can do one without the other.
Right.
But gosh, this trailer made me laugh so many different times. And part of it is because of how well Franco is playing Tommy Wiseau, as the writer, director, producer, actor of the movie The Room. There's a clip that I think LA Times released, and it's James Franco, Dave Franco, and then Greg Sestero and Tommy Wiseau all sitting on a couch talking. And it's like James Franco is slipping in and out of character and talking just like Tommy. And it's uncanny how well he is able to do the Tommy accent and dialogue. And it's, I think that's going to be where the special part of this movie is that, I mean, even Tommy, who I think by now understands that this film is, or is like, has come to terms with that this film is as bad as it is from what people say. I think, I mean, he has said that this movie is 99%. He gives his 99.9% approval of this movie, with the exception of how Franco throws the football in one scene.
Okay.
Which is even like that, even that by itself just makes this movie even more entertaining. But this movie's been playing on the festival circuit. It's been getting huge reviews. It's won a couple awards and is a big front runner when it comes time for nominations come January and the Academy Awards come February. So look for that movie to be out in limited release on December 1st, nationwide December 8th. And Downsizing comes out nationwide November or December 22nd. Wow, December's going to be a busy month.
Yeah, we're going to have to do like 8 podcasts or something.
Yeah, we're going to have to do like a Christmas, like, let's see a movie every other day and review.
Because, I mean,
it's just going to be.
Right. And we're also going to have a Star Wars blowout, of course.
Oh my gosh. We're going to need to do like 3 or 4 Star Wars episodes. We're going to have to do like a Star Wars, like, first viewing, second viewing, and then like 1 month later.
Yes.
All the meanwhile, in January, we're also going to be doing our top films of 2017, our films to look forward to in 2018, our 5 years later Oscars, or our 10 year later Oscars, where we will say the movies that came out in 2007, which of those deserves to have actually won. I mean, so January is going to be a very big month for the podcast, and there will be tons of content coming out that month.
Content. We love content.
We love the content. But let's go ahead and get into our main topic of the night, which is our top 5 high school movies. The reason we did this, like I said, was we were both terrified to see Mother after seeing it last week. It's also been pretty divisive, and not that that's not a reason to see it, but if it's horrifying and I have to, it's not a film that I'm like it was one of those films that's like everybody's like, this is getting rave reviews. It's like, okay, we have to see this. Mother, I'm more like, I can catch it when it comes out on DVD and be terrified in the comfort of my own home.
Right, exactly.
One of the reasons why we wanted to do high school movies, or that I thought it'd be interesting to do high school movies, was because, Trevor, you are a huge fan of high school movies, right?
I am. I do. I love a good high school movie. I'll basically watch anything. I'll basically give anything a try that's a high school movie. I mean, there's definitely the bad ones, like Cruel Intentions, which is actually like a really good bad movie.
Or Prom.
Prom is another. That's a very meh movie, but it's all right. I will say the high school film genre lends itself to a lot of good bad movies.
Yes.
Like I said, Cruel Intentions. I think that Love and Basketball, which is like sort of half a high school movie, is a really good bad movie. The list goes on. But yeah, I love high school movies. I think the interesting thing about high school movies to me is the wide variety of the self-awareness of the characters. Mm-hmm. Some high school characters are incredibly self-aware. Some are not at all. It kind of goes back and forth to fit the story. There are some that are a lot more authentic than others. But it's something that I feel like the genre resonates well with just about everyone. Like, everyone can connect to a high school movie because basically most people who have grown up in American society have some sort of, I mean, have a high school experience.
People went to high school.
Right. So, I mean, I will say the high school film genre does skew itself towards white suburban people. so there is definitely that. It's not incredibly universal. But I just like it. It's sort of like a lot of them tend to be like children's movies without the hokiness, I guess.
Or sometimes with the hokiness, unfortunately.
Right. Yes, that's true also.
But let's get into our honorable mentions, not honorable mentions, honorable mentions of films that kind of were close to making the list or we considered, but ultimately didn't make the top five. So Trevor, what were your honorable mentions?
Okay, my honorable mentions. Well, I will say first, my initial list was probably 30 films of high school films that I would describe as being good. I narrowed it down to about 13. So I have about 8 honorable mentions, and I'm going to give like one sentence about them all. My first one is Chronicle, which is a very unique film. And almost made the cut for me, but was not quite there. Also, maybe the best found footage film ever.
I would agree.
Depending on how you feel about Cloverfield, which I know I like more than most people, but Chronicle is very good. Mean Girls is a classic. I mean, you will get pregnant and die. The lines in this film are so good. Perks of Being a Wallflower, it was close to my top five. It's wonderful. It's gut-wrenching. It's so real. Remember the Titans? It's just so fun. Just a classic sports movie. Great soundtrack. Young Ryan Gosling. Younger Hayden Panettiere.
Denzel.
A lot of fun. Yeah, Denzel doing Denzel things. Another football movie, Varsity Blues, which is, I think, even more of a Texas football movie than Friday Night Lights is. Varsity Blues, I think, feels a little more real to me. I don't know why that is, but I love Varsity Blues. Pretty in Pink, which is fantastic. The reason why everyone still loves John Cryer and hates James Spader 30 years later. Can't Buy Me Love with a young Patrick Dempsey as just a preciously fun film. And then my last two, I'm kind of shoehorning in there. Spider-Man Homecoming, is maybe kind of a high school film.
I would consider it as one.
It's great. It's not top five because it's so new and doesn't have, we'll talk about staying power. And then our movie we watched last week, it was about a bunch of high schoolers and it was really good. Mm. So I'm putting that in the honorable mentions too, cause I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It has surprisingly lasted well in my mind. And I mean that in terms of like, the more I thought about it, the more I like.
Yeah.
And I think that'll be a big player on our lists come the end of the year. Okay, my honorable mentions are Dead Poets Society. Fantastic Robin Williams performance and story. And we get the classic, "Oh, Captain, my Captain" line, which is maybe nowadays feels cheesy, but in the context of that movie, the way they build up to it is the most sincere. And I mean, like, I think any teacher would love to have their students respond like that at some point. I should also mention, me and Trevor have both been teachers at some point in our careers. So
that's true.
That is an interesting little fact.
I'll say that probably would have made my list if I had seen it more recently. It's probably been at least 10 or 12 years since I've seen it.
I actually watched it recently on the advice of an old student of mine who I believe he said it was one of his favorite films, and I was like, okay, I'll check it out again. And man, it's solid. Solid. Mean Girls, which Trevor already talked about, probably one of the most quotable high school movies of all time. And oh, just so good. Tina Fey, you are a gem. Superbad, which is I think came out my senior year. It either came out my junior or my senior year in high school, like yeah. right as I was 17. Hilarious. Go ahead.
I'm gonna tell my funny Superbad story.
Okay.
So it came out 2007. I remember that distinctly because it was the summer before my senior year of high school, which I guess would have been right before your junior year. So, yeah. I didn't end up seeing it until it came out on DVD, I think. But so some guys in my class, after seeing Superbad, started drawing penises in one of the bathroom stalls in my high school. And they did it like every day until it was completely covered. And when we were gone on senior trip, one of the administrators happened to use that bathroom stall. And that wasn't until March. Gosh. So it took until March for that to be found. And then they closed that bathroom and made us walk to a different floor as punishment until someone fessed up to doing it. But the funny thing was there were like 15 people who participated.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
So Superbad making a lasting impression outside of the theater.
Yes. I should say there's a part of what that's referencing is that Jonah Hill's character in that movie, when he was a kid, could not stop drawing penises all over his textbook, anything. Right. Superbad also has the pleasure of introducing us to Emma Stone. So there's that.
Yeah.
Back to the Future is one of my honorable mentions. Just Michael J. Fox being the most lovable, enjoyable person you could ever imagine. Easy A. With once again Emma Stone, who that movie is one of those that's like this movie has no right being this good, and yet it's five times as good as it should be. Juno, the Ellen Page high school teenage pregnancy movie, which is Michael Cera, and it's just heartfelt, warm, sincere. It's everything that you hope for with that subject matter, and yet manages to still be hysterical. 21 Jump Street. Which I realize the main characters aren't high school age, but it takes place in high school and has a lot to deal with what goes on in high school and the emotions of like revisiting high school. And so I feel like that should be in there.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. Rushmore, Wes Anderson's high school movie, which barely was these next. So Rushmore and this next film were like my last two out. Rushmore is my favorite Wes Anderson movie. I think it's his best piece of work. It's just funny, spot on, doesn't miss a beat. It's perfect from beginning to end. But ultimately, as I was going through my list, just wasn't something that I connected with as much as the other movies in my top five, which was a big theme for me in how I chose my top five. And the last film that I left out is Rian Johnson's debut film, Brick, starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which is one of the best neo-noir films of all time. It's just fantastic. It's well acted. It's well written. It goes with the tropes of the genre, but somehow manages to reinvent things, and it's just fresh and new, and set within this high school environment. It's just, it's a very underseen film that I hope more people seek out after Last Jedi comes out, because they want more of what Rian Johnson has. We should say that one of the big criteria for us choosing these films was films where either the main characters or a majority of the plot take place within high school. So other than that, though, Trevor, how did you determine what films made it into your top five? Like, what were some of the criteria that you really went for?
Staying power is a big thing for me. Are these films hold up on multiple watches? Because the high school film is supposed to be, you know, fun and meaningful. It's not necessarily in that Aronofsky of the watch it once, enjoy it, move on.
Enjoy it, but respect it.
Right. Yes. So rewatchability, I went a lot towards originality with mine because there's some repetitiveness in high school films. That is an unfortunate part of the genre. Those were kind of the big things for me. Films that could hit a lot of notes being being funny while also having something somewhat important to say, an important story to tell, an important comment on society, any of those kind of things are kind of what kind of put all those things together. I will say, I know I texted you earlier today and I said I was having trouble. I had three that were definite top five, and my other two spots could have gone to like 10 different movies.
Yeah.
What kind of criteria did you use?
Mine had a lot to do with films that I either personally related to or just enjoyed watching more than anything. Films that like I could sit down and rewatch anytime, anywhere, and would get the same level of enjoyment or thought or learn something new or reflect on something different. But films that I personally related to. So all five of my top films are films that I can very much personally relate to. And films that I just, you know, if you told me that you were going to lock me in a room and make me watch these five movies on repeat for a week, and I just go from 5 to 1, 5 to 1, 5 to 1 for a week straight, I wouldn't be upset because they're all just such enjoyable movies. Okay. But yeah, let's get started with our top five. Trevor, what is your number five film? Okay.
I will say, first of all, I skipped one on my list that was an honorable mention, and it is Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which in some ways is kind of the quintessential high school film. Cameron Crowe wrote it after pretending like he was in high school when he was like 25 for a year and taking notes on everything. It's Sean Penn's first movie role, and he's hilarious. And the character that Judge Reinhold plays is like the coolest person in film. It's just great. Anyway, so sorry, I had to get that in there because I love that film. Also, there is some nudity in that, so be careful when you're watching that. All right, so number five for me is one that was on your honorable mentions, and it is Easy A, starring friend of the podcast Emma Stone.
Ooh, friend of the podcast.
I didn't realize we had an Oscar winner. I mean, she doesn't know we exist, but you know, we like her work.
Emma, you're a great actress. I'm sure that you will be an honorable mensch soon, and we love everything you do. So if you want to be our friend, we would love to have you on the podcast if you listen.
Sure.
If you're one of the 100 people that listens.
That's right. So Easy A is hilarious. It's very unique. It's based on Nathaniel Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, except it's way better and not as boring. I like that it has these largely intelligent, self-aware high schoolers. It doesn't dumb down its audience. I mean, except for a couple of the characters, of course, but I mean, or dumb down its characters to the audience. It has great performances, not only by Emma Stone, also by Stanley Tucci, who's one of the greats. Patricia Clarkson, who's great. Thomas Hayden Church, who's great. Amanda Bynes is hilarious and great in this. This is
an Easy A.
Do what?
Amanda Bynes?
Yeah.
Amanda Bynes is in it. Oh, she is.
Yeah, she's the Christian girl.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I thought you were meaning her best friend. I was like, that's what's her name? Allie or AJ, whichever sister.
Yeah, yeah. It's Allie Machalka. Yeah.
Machalka. Oh man, I can't believe I messed that up. I'm embarrassed and I will cease to talk the rest of this episode. So Trevor, all you.
it's so good. I mean, the scene where she gets the greeting card from her grandparents that plays that Natasha Bedingfield song that everyone knows, and the way she like opens it and closes it, it's hilarious. The timing is so good. She's funny. The whole thing is funny. It's a really original idea. I know it's borrowed a lot from Hawthorne's Scarlet Letter, but it's a whole different kind of take on it. It's just a really fun movie. As you said, this movie is way better than it has any business being. It's not like written by one of the great writers or directed by one of the great directors. Like, it's everybody came together and made a dang good film.
Yeah. Completely agree with everything you just said. My number five is a little scene film from 2013 called Kings of Summer, which was directed by Jordan Voight Roberts, who went on to direct Kong Skull Island from this year. And it stars Nick Robinson, Gabriel Basso, Moises Iris, Nick Offerman. And it is just one of the most... It's one of the funniest films I've seen in the past 5 years. Like, I laughed so hard watching this movie, and a lot of it is due to Moises Iris, who a lot of people would remember as Rico from Hannah Montana Show. Or also he was, what's his name? He was in Ender's Game. Oh, what's the bad guy? Not the bad guy. Bonzo. Have you ever seen Ender's Game?
I have not seen Ender's Game.
Have you read the book?
No, unfortunately.
I feel like the movie's okay, but the book's fantastic. But yeah, Moises Iris, Rico from Hannah Montana is hysterical in this movie. I mean, there are so many lines in this movie that are just spot on, perfectly delivered. And it's one of those movies that really plays on like the idea of wanting to get out and be on your own, which is such a feeling that every single high schooler feels. But then once they get out on their own, they realize that it's not as great as they had thought. And that there's something missing and you have to kind of learn to grow up. And it's really about that growing up feeling of, you know, that feeling of like, oh, I'm out on my own. And then once you're out on your own, you're like, oh dang, what do I do? But it's a fantastic adventure. The chemistry between the three main kids is wonderful. It's a delight from beginning to end and just fantastic. Everybody should go see that movie. Trevor, what is your number four?
All right. I will say I have not seen Kings of Summer, so it's definitely on my list of things to see because I always wanted to see it. I just never got around to it. I'm definitely even more intrigued now.
Nice.
Number four is one, again, that you mentioned in your honorable mention. And it also has a endearing female lead who has not gotten the great roles that Emma Stone has since then. And it is Juno.
Ooh. Now, we should say Ellen Page does have a great role coming up in Flatliners.
Flatliners. Actually, we may just change this podcast to Popcorn Optional, a podcast that talks about how bad Flatliners is.
Do you feel like we have to see Flatliners now that we've talked about it so much?
I don't think I can. I just don't think I can do it. It's so dumb.
Oh,
it's so dumb.
I want to so bad.
Oh.
But
maybe
okay,
we'll like, I might read. We'll maybe like do a Redbox review or something.
Yeah, maybe in January when it's a slow month, and that's better than anything that comes out in that month, anyways.
Yeah.
We'll see. But yeah, Trevor, so, Juno.
Juno is great because of the. It's just such a real take on things. I mean, I know that like things are like they're quirky people and they're it's kind of kitschy and kind of cute and everything. And it kind of I feel like you kind of look back on it now and you think this is overdone. But this thing was pretty fresh when it came out. But it's the take it has on teen pregnancy is just so matter of fact and so real. And it tackles an issue that like. I can't even think of another movie that really tackles teen pregnancy in such an honest and real and gut-wrenching and complicated way that this does. Ellen Page is great. Michael Cera is great. Allison Janney and J.K. Simmons are just fantastic.
Man.
Who, as they both always are. Jason Bateman and Jennifer Garner are great. Like there's great performances. This is Diablo Cody's best screenplay. It's Jason Reitman's best movie that he's directed. And they've both done some pretty decent other things. This is just, it does everything that it wants to do so well.
Yeah, Trevor, I think you brought up a good point of earlier when you were talking about the ways that you picked your films of them being unique. And I can't think of another film like this. I think it gets a bad rap for being like super hipster. And I mean, I can't think of another word other than hipster. And I think too many people rule it out because of that, but yeah, it's, It's definitely amazing.
It was along those lines. It was pretty unique when it came out. I mean, it was nominated for Best Picture.
It was?
Yeah.
I did not know that. That's pretty, I mean, when did that film come out? 2007?
Yes. Yeah. I just pulled it up. No Country for Old Men won, which fine, but, Juno was nominated for Best Picture.
You know, for 2007, that's a pretty bold move to put that in there. And that's like one of those times where I'm sure that as that came out, people were like, yeah, I'm happy that film deserves to get nominated. So good for Juno.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
My next film, my number four film, is a film that actually came out last year, which is something I tried to avoid, but three of my films came out in the past 5 years, so whatever. But it's such a film that's just stuck with me. It's a film that I watched probably 6 or 7 times within the first month of seeing it. And it's a film called Sing Street, directed by John Carney, who did Once and Begin Again. And it's a musical, but not in terms of like Les Mis is a musical where they're singing constantly. It's a musical in terms of tells a story of a kid in a British school who sees a girl and wants to impress her. So says that he has a band with some of his friends, and then makeshift just kind of creates a band so that she can be in a music video with the band. And then this band turns into a real thing where they're creating actual real music. And it takes place in the 80s and kind of draws from a lot of big 80s bands. And you see the band go through this phase of trying to determine their style by experimenting with other band styles. And so they go through all these different types of like 80s music. And it's so good. The music is the best music I've heard in a movie in years. I mean, better than, dare I say, Moana or Frozen. But it just captures perfectly the feeling of like wanting to impress a girl in high school, and what that means for high school, like guys of just trying to impress somebody, and then, you know, slowly you realize that your ultimate motivations beyond that are so much more of like, you know, wanting to pursue your passions in life and wanting to, in this film, like get out of their hometown and pursue music that they love. And also stick it to the man, because, sometimes you have stick it to the man neosis and you need to do that. But I think it perfectly captures that feeling in high school of so badly being ready to get out of high school and do whatever you want to do outside of there, like whether or not you want to pursue music or writing or being a doctor, like just wanting to get out of high school and pursue that thing that you're passionate about. And it just perfectly captures that moment, that emotion, in such a sincere and unique way. But Sing Street's on Netflix, so if you get a chance, go watch it, because it is well worth your time, and you will be playing that soundtrack for weeks to come.
I unfortunately have not seen Sing Street either, so I don't have anything else to say. But I love John Carney's music movies. Once is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, Once. Trevor, you don't buy a whole lot of DVDs or movies, right?
Right. I buy very few movies.
Bought Once, right?
I did purchase Once. It was only $5, but still, I did purchase it. I probably own less than 25 movies on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And that is one of them. So, yeah.
Once a fantastic musical starring Glenn Hansard of The Frames and of Glenn Hansard in Swell Season. So go check that one out as well. But Trevor, number three, what is your number three top high school movie?
So my last three, this is a little bit of a spoiler, they're all over 20 years old.
Ooh.
Number three is another one of the classic high school movies, and it is Dazed and Confused.
Ooh. There we go.
Directed, of course, by the great Richard Linklater, who, I mean, I feel like maybe we I guess Jake included, we all have kind of an outsized influence on Linklater on us because of going to film school in Texas. So you're definitely going to, you're going to see the Linklater films and hear about Linklater, of course. Because of some, I mean, so many of his movies are set in Texas and have to do with Texas. But Dazed and Confused is just this perfect one day little slice of life of high school. You have all different kinds of kids doing all different kinds of things. You've got all the stereotypes all together. They're doing this thing. It's the late 70s. They all have awesome cars because all cars were awesome in the late 70s. They do whatever they want. They go around. They have these awesome moonlight towers that just light up the woods and they can just hang out. It's just, it's so much fun. It introduced the world to Ben Affleck and Matthew McConaughey. And gives you two of the great movie lines of all time from Matthew McConaughey, both. One, of course, what has now become his catchphrase, "All right, all right, all right." and then the most classic McConaughey line, speaking of high school girls, "I get older and they stay the same age." So, I mean, it's just, this is just a classic. This is, it's Linklater's second film that he directed, after Slacker, which is another great film for a lot of different reasons. But I love the way that Dazed and Confused encapsulates so much of high school with just one day and showing us like 100 minutes of it.
Yeah. I have not seen Dazed and Confused, but I've heard good things about it.
Oh my gosh.
I'm a big Linklater fan, so I feel like it's just like, I think everybody has those films that like are classic that they haven't gotten around to, and that's one of them. Too. But yeah. My number three is a film that I'm going to guess that we're going to talk about in a couple minutes, but it's 1985's The Breakfast Club, directed by John Hughes.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
That's, I have a feeling that that's something that is going to be in the top two on Trevor's list. And so I'll go ahead and move into my number two film then, which is 2012's Perks of Being a Wallflower, directed by Stephen Chbosky. And if you listen to our top 10 episode, my number one and two film are going to be no surprise to anybody because they were both in my top 10 movies of all time. But Perks is one of those films that I have such a personal connection to because of what the main character goes through in that film. The struggles of just loneliness and the joy of, you know, having those high school friends, and it perfectly encapsulates what high school meant to a lot of people, in that high school sucks in a lot of ways, but even because you're constantly feeling misunderstood, like, you know, your parents don't understand you, your friends don't understand you, and the people around you don't understand you, you feel alone, you feel worthless, but the people around you, whether that is family or your friends, make it better and help you through that time. And I mean, at least that's the feeling that I had in high school. I know that there are a bunch of people that loved high school. I was not one of those people. But the cast is just perfect between Logan Lerman, Emma Watson, Ezra Miller. And it's a film. It's the film that I've seen most in theaters. I saw it 5 times when it was out in theaters. And it's just, for me, the perfect encapsulation of a lot of the emotions that I had in high school. And as someone that struggled with depression, it's a movie that I haven't seen depression handled in a more relatable way than I have in this movie. And so I love it for that reason of being able to show people that it's like, even people that struggle with depression, they don't always, it's not always on the surface, and it's not always something that you readily see, but it's kind of something that's always in the background. It's always in that person's head churning, and they're always constantly thinking about things. And so I think Chbosky handles that in a perfect way, and it's a film that I wish more people had seen, and it's a film that I hope more people seek out, because I think that talking about mental illness is such a taboo thing in culture nowadays, still, and I think this film at least has helped me to have more conversations about that topic. So yeah, I love it. And like I said, it's a personal film. And so I understand if not everybody agrees with it, but it's a film that I love, and it's a film that I think more people should check out.
Yeah, so. I agree. This is a great film. I think it's a really important film, as you were saying. The way that this film uses the great David Bowie song Heroes is so good. It's the role that that song plays in the film is pretty important and kind of showing you the characters and pushing along the story. It's just, it's a great film. I really enjoy it.
Yeah. That scene at the end of the movie and the quote that goes with it. And I mean, I'll watch that. I've probably seen that film like 12, 15 times now. And I get chills every time at the end of that movie. It's just a perfect. Oh, and Mae Whitman's also in that movie. Mae Whitman, who's just fantastic.
And Paul
actress.
Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Oh, man, what a cast. Paul Rudd is underused in that film and still one of the best parts of it. So,
yeah,
that's my number two. Trevor, what is your number two film?
All right, my number two is one that was in your honorable mentions. And it is the 1985 science fiction classic Back to the Future.
Yes.
This is just one of, I mean, I would say probably one of the like top 20 culturally significant films in America, maybe.
Yeah. No, I would even put it higher than that, I think. Like, yeah, I completely agree.
The there are so many references in popular culture that tie back to this film. Every time anyone sees a DeLorean, they think of this film. You know, it's just like it's so ubiquitous. It's so great. It's so original. It's Robert Zemeckis has had somewhat of an up and down career. But this idea, this original story that he had, is just fantastic. The performances are great. It's like what a summer blockbuster should be. It's fun. It's endearing. It brings you in. It has just enough science fiction. It brings you in with these time travel theories. It has these great quotes like where we're going, we don't need roads. Like the way that Christopher Lloyd delivers his line of we're going back to the future. It's just everything about this movie is so good. Hello, McFly, make like a tree and get out of here. You have you have Michael J. Fox playing Chuck Berry's song in front of Chuck Berry's cousin Marvin, who calls his cousin Chuck and says, "Listen to this rock and roll music." I mean, it's just so good. The performances are great. Leah Thompson, Crispin Glover, the guy who plays Biff Tannen, who I'm completely blanking on. I think this like
Thomas
ruined his career. Yeah, because he couldn't play anything else. But
yeah,
or nobody wanted to cast him as anything else. But I mean, I love Back to the Future. It's so fun.
Also, James Tolkien of Top Gun fame as Mr. Strickland.
Yes, yes.
It's Trevor. I couldn't agree with you more. Back to the Future is fantastic. Super culturally relevant.
I mean, it's one of those movies that you're like when your kid is a teenager, you're like, I have to show my kid Back to the Future.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I think the best part of Back to the Future is how much you fall in love with Michael J. Fox and Marty McFly. I mean, you can't state it enough how perfect he is for that role. And like, even like, I have a feeling that if anybody says Doc, like, come on, Doc. It's, I mean, you can hear Michael J. Fox saying that like in your head in his like, oh, just perfect like little acts. I mean, it's just, he's perfect in that film.
Yeah.
And I wish we had more Michael J. Fox today, but I'm thankful that we at least have this film to go
definitely.
Off.
Definitely.
So let's get into our number ones. My number one is Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which I'm sure comes as a surprise to no one, considering it's in my top three favorite films of all time. It's timeless, in my opinion. It's ultimately something that I feel like every single person can relate to, because it's something that every single person dreams of doing on their day off, whether that's your day off from work or whether that's your day off from high school or from anything. And it just covers so many topics. It's so broad, and the characters from Cameron to Ferris to Sloan to Rooney. And it goes from a baseball game to a museum to a restaurant to arcade. There's cars, there's high school. It perfectly transitions that high school, that like feeling of like, I don't want to grow up. And while I am young, I'm going to stay as young as possible and enjoy that time. And I think that's such a valuable little lesson and little feature that this movie for me just perfectly encapsulates that time in high school of never wanting to grow up and trying to stay as young as possible during that time. It's also super quotable, like the the whole like I don't believe in isms line, or life moves pretty fast, to the scene with Charlie Sheen, who stayed up for 48 hours so that his eyes would look super drugged out. And then there's the whole I could be the walrus, although I'd still have to bum rides to high school. It's just, oh, it's so perfect. It's quotable, it's rewatchable. It's, in my opinion, the perfect comedy, the perfect high school movie.
Yeah. Okay. So I have a weird thing with Ferris Bueller. Okay. So I acknowledge that this is a great film. I've seen this movie one time. I think I saw it at a weird time in my life, because my big takeaway from the film was, I feel so bad for Cameron. I don't know if that's just like the kind of person I am or was at the time or what, but that was like all I could get out of my head, was this poor Cameron has this jerk friend who messed up everything. So
I think you're missing the whole point of the film then. It's not, Ferris isn't trying to mess up Cameron's life.
I need to rewatch it.
He's trying to enrich it.
Yeah. I need to rewatch it. Definitely. I love Matthew Broderick in the 80s. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit weird now. It kind of comes off as a little bit weird in his more recent things, but he was a lot of fun then. There are some iconic moments in this. The parade is an iconic film moment.
Yep.
This basically, like, I feel like every role that Alan Ruck has had in his life has been because of this film. I think it really set him on a path to success.
Yeah. I'm completely with you on that. It's fantastic, and in my opinion, it's John Hughes's best. But Trevor, I'm gonna guess that you're going to disagree that Ferris Bueller is John Hughes's best.
I'll say it's only appropriate that we both have a John Hughes film at number one.
Yes.
Because no one understood the plight of the white suburban American high schooler better than John Hughes. My number one is, of course, The Breakfast Club, which is my favorite John Hughes film. I kind of hate to do this because I know it's like the cliche universally accepted best high school film, but it is for a reason. And yes. I wrote in my notes about this film was, it's probably overhyped, but it's still great. Like in this film, the biggest thing this film does, and this is a really important thing that we all forget all the time, and it's that it reminds us that other people are just people. They're most of the differences we have between any of us are completely artificial. They're circumstantial. We're all people. We all have wants and dreams and hopes and desires and fears, and we need to be loved and we need to be accepted and we need to have other people around us. And this film shows us this using these five intentionally stereotypical kids stuck into a movie set that's literally one place. It's the performances are amazing. Judd Nelson, good Lord, in this movie is so good. But they're all great. What John Hughes gets out of these people. This is a beautiful film. It's beautifully simple. It's incredibly efficient. It still gets its point across. I think it's still relevant, even though it's talked about a lot and mentioned a lot. I think it still holds its weight that it's always had. It has the epic fist pump by Judd Nelson with the "Don't You Forget About Me" song playing. I mean, this is just great. The line and Judd Nelson's delivery of "Smoke up, Johnny" just like tears you apart.
Because of that scene is the Community version of that scene.
Right. Made hilarious by Danny Pudi's wonderful impression as Abed. Yes. But yeah, The Breakfast Club, it is, in some ways, it's what all high school movies are trying to be. Mm-hmm. This movie that's just so real, and it's funny, and it's emotional, and it's honest, and it's you're just watching five kids have a conversation for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's it brings you in, it's engrossing, it's just great.
Yeah, it's, for me, I think the best part of this movie is the whole, like, the journey that it takes you on, from how they describe themselves as being the brain, the athlete, the basket case, the princess, and the criminal. And by the end of the movie, you realize that those are just stereotypes of how we view people, and that no matter what preconceived ideas you have of people, everybody is so much more than that idea. Like, the nerd is not the perfect school kid. The jock is not the perfect athlete. The basket case isn't completely messed up. And the criminal may be messed up, but there's a pretty good reason as to why. And if you had been through that, you would probably have a pretty good understanding. And things aren't as easy for the princess as you would think. And I think it just completely breaks down that wall of whatever you think of the people that you don't know, you probably don't actually know, and that you should get to know them. And most importantly, have a conversation and get to know them, because there's a good chance that you might end up liking them and enjoying spending time with them.
Yeah, it's just, it's great. And from a technical standpoint, it's the efficiency of this film, like what it costs mm-hmm. to make, how quickly they were able to shoot it. They shot it in like 3 weeks. It's a marvel that it was able to be done as efficiently as it was. And that is a testament to this story, the way that John Hughes crafts this story. And this story is so good that you could use almost the same script and replace the characters with random adults that are just like them in a different position, in a different setting, and it still works.
Yeah, completely agree. I mean, outside of even the movie, the poster is maybe one of the most iconic movie posters of all time.
Yeah.
That's been parodied or copied an infinite amount of times with every single movie you can think of. And
it's also, and I know that I end up making fun of movie titles a lot. I will acknowledge titling a movie is much harder than you would think that it is.
Mm-hmm.
But this is a great title. This is, I mean, it's unique enough, and it's iconic, and it tells the story that it needs to. The way that this, like, everything about this film I love, and it's great.
Yep. Completely agree. So that's our top five. Let's go through those one more time. My top five was number five, Kings of Summer. Number four, Sing Street. Number three, The Breakfast Club. Number two, Perks of Being a Wallflower. Number one, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Trevor, what was your top five?
Number five, Easy A. Number four, Juno. Number three, Dazed and Confused. Number two, Back to the Future. And number one, The Breakfast Club.
Awesome. Well, that's all we have for our top five movies. Let's go ahead and get into our content of the week. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
All right, so I wanted to go along with the theme here, and I'm going to recommend a TV show that is the best TV show that I've seen about high school, and it is Freaks and Geeks.
Oh, dang it, you took my recommend.
We should have coordinated.
Okay, go ahead.
So, I mean, Freaks and Geeks is great. It has our aforementioned friends, Seth Rogen and James Franco. Also has Jason Segel and Linda Cardellini, Busy Phillips. This is just a great show. From very early work of Judd Apatow and Paul Feig. It was only on for one season. It got canceled, which is one of the grand travesties of television history, in my opinion. I believe it is still on Netflix. I didn't double check. That's where I watched it. But this is a great show along those same lines. My other recommendation is in honor of there being so many people of color winning Emmys this past weekend, which is fantastic because there are so many people doing such great work. I will recommend anything I think we've talked about this already, but literally anything that Donald Glover does, I recommend it. Like, if he's acting, if he's directing, if he's writing, if he's producing, if he's singing, if he's rapping, if he's guest starring in an episode of 30 Rock, like, I literally recommend everything Donald Glover does.
Yep. I will echo the Donald Glover, and I will echo Freaks and Geeks. Between the cast you've already said and John Francis Daly, Sam Levine, Martin Starr, I mean,
there's something for everybody. Yeah,
and it's that one season is better than most full 8-episode. And I think that one season is even only like, oh, it's 18 episodes, never mind. But man, what they're able to do with that one season is fantastic. I guess I'll go ahead and recommend something else. I watched a film this past week called The Founder, which is about how McDonald's started and how the McDonald's brothers were swindled out of their empire by a man named Ray Kroc. I'm shocked that McDonald's let this film get made. I don't know how it happened, because they had to have given their consent to use their story and logo and likeness. And it's a great film with Michael Keaton, Nick Offerman, and Linda Cardellini, and a host of other people. It's a fascinating look at the history of McDonald's, and I don't know how it got made. I'll say that. So that's all we have for this week. If you have enjoyed listening to us, please share us with a friend. That's the best way for us to grow, is just by you listeners sharing us and letting people know what you like about us. So if you want to get in contact with us, you can either go through our website at popcornoptional.com. You can find us on Twitter at popcornoptional, where Jake and Trevor tweet a lot. You can interact with them there. You can find me online at 321CamiTime. Trevor, where can we find you online?
I am on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor. And I've been tweeting out some of my favorite songs recently, so check that out if you want to see cool music.
Jake Brown couldn't be with us tonight, but you can find him at jakebrown.tv. Jake, we should mention that Jake Brown, we asked him if there was a top five that he wanted us to read out, and the one thing that he said was, make sure that you guys mention Superbad and how underrated it is. So Jake, for you, we shout out Superbad. But that's all we have for tonight. We'll be back next week, and there are 4 films that we can see next week, between Stronger, Kingsman: Golden Circle, Lego Ninjago Movie, and Battle of the Sexes. But according to Mensch rules, we have to see a movie that a Mensch is in, which would be Battle of the Sexes. So we will see if that ends up happening. But until next time, pop, pop.